Support comes from the Rosa Parks Museum on Troy University's Montgomery campus. Located on the spot of Mrs. Parks' historic 1955 arrest and featuring exhibits that chronicle the history of the Montgomery bus boycott. More information at troy.edu/Rosa Parks.
From Troy Public Radio, this is In Focus, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. Since banks are in the news, we decided to broaden the discussion to include the World Bank. Last Thanksgiving at a friend's family reunion in North Alabama, I talked with Ian Knapp, whose career with the World Bank took him to Africa and Asia. Ian is originally from Wales, and he retired from the World Bank 18 years ago. We sat on the porch where he reminisced about the difference the World Bank has made in several countries. Ian, you began your career with the World Bank in Washington. Tell me about it.
The World Bank was in Washington. I spent 4 years, 5 years trying to help the bank fix itself. And when they reorganized themselves, went to work for the vice president of Africa. Spent most of my time in Africa, a little bit in Asia, but I would say more Africa. And part of that involved living in Kenya with my wife and my daughter for 4 years.
Let's talk about the World Bank. Not everyone understands it. How would you explain it to your listeners?
Very simply, the bank is like a normal bank. It lends, and it is owned by, and I'm not sure of the exact number today, but around about 100 countries, and each country has a share based on how much they paid into the pool of money that helps capitalize the bank. And then the bank is the lender of last resort when a country, and that's all we lend to are countries, can't go find money other ways. They come to the World Bank, and the bank will lend them money on very advantageous terms that does get repaid for projects and things that the bank believes and agrees with the individual country would help the populace and help improve the lives of the people.
Would you describe their help to, is it mostly underdeveloped countries?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, countries that we think of today as developed 10, 15 years ago, for example, China, we lent to China. Now, I think China might be the best example of countries that are own part of the bank, but are actually borrowing money from the bank. And then right at the other end of the spectrum, you have countries that are very, very small, and they borrow maybe once every few years rather than every year. And the things they borrow for vary tremendously. Sometimes it's for education. Sometimes it's for agriculture. Sometimes it's to help them build up the infrastructure. Some of the countries I was involved in, they borrowed money to actually help develop their ability to run their governments, which I found very interesting, and perhaps one might call that governance today.
Can you give us some examples of what you did in Asia with the World Bank and then what you did in Kenya with the World Bank?
In Asia, it was actually the very, very first project that I was involved in. It was while I was still part of the internal management consultancy group. And I talked the boss at the time into getting the operational side of the bank to utilize our expertise as managers. So I went to the Philippines as part of a group of guys, and there were some ladies, to help the country, which at that time was run by Marcos. And they were getting rid, if that's the right word, selling off all of the big companies that the government owned. And they had to have a process to how they would do this. And the bank had some expertise and my own personal expertise. I'd run companies as a management consultant. I thought of myself as a manager. My input into the team was, how do we structure this company? How might we present it to foreigners, merchant bankers, and that sort of thing. Now, in Kenya, I did a little bit of the same, but I also ran, while I was there, a project that was oriented to trying to improve the power of the civil servants, the various ministries in the government. What training, what educational background should civil servants have? What specific strengths were needed in various parts of the government? And they had borrowed money to put into programs to help do this. So I was making sure that the money was spent the way it had been agreed and making suggestions on maybe you do it this way, would that help? Could we bring in some outsiders that might help you do A, B, and C?
Ian, when you follow the news today and you're hearing news out of the Philippines, news out of Asia, news out of Africa, can you see the results of your handiwork threaded through these news stories?
Oh, yes. I like to follow some of the things that I was involved in. I mean, the Philippines today does not have lots and lots and lots of government-controlled and owned companies. If you're in Kenya, very recently, and unlike many, many countries in Africa, Kenya went through an election that was peaceful. And there always have been issues and problems in Africa about elections. And while the loser didn't like it, it was a peaceful transformation. And part of that is to do with the internal strengths of the government, the civil servants, the various ministries. So yes, I can see the money they borrowed and the work that the bank does helps them.
I guess the final question would be, do you think the World Bank's presence in the Philippines, in Kenya, do you think these countries are better off because of that?
Absolutely. I lose no sleep at all over certainly the projects that I was part of and, you know, and the team I was a part of on those projects. Now, I'm sure that the money was well spent and enhanced the overall lives of all of the peoples of these countries. Yeah, I'm sure. The World Bank isn't the only part of this story, though. There's the UN and there's the IMF, things that I'm sure the listeners in America would understand. But each country, let's take Britain where I hail from, they have an organization called DFID, and that's their sort of lending arm. And they lend, as does French, the Swedes, the Norwegians. So each country has a facility where it tries to help the underdeveloped parts of the world. People perhaps don't realize that. They think, oh, it's only, you know, America that's being asked to help all the time. And that's not true.
Thank you for straightening that out. Ian Knapp, I want to thank you for sharing your distinguished career with your listeners today.
I'm not sure it was that distinguished. There are an awful lot of people that... But I had fun, and I greatly enjoyed both the countries I worked in, the people I met, and I'm very thankful that I got the opportunity to do it. You know, the bank's got, I'm not sure, 10,000 people. They wouldn't be there, I don't think, unless they felt they could make a difference. And forget the institution, forget the bureaucracy. I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to the people who are there and the people in the countries that we used to go and work with. If this world's going to get saved, it's not by governments. I think it'll be by people.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That was Ian Knapp discussing his career with the World Bank in Africa and Asia. Thanks for joining us today for In Focus, which is a podcast on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Carolyn Hutchison, and this is listener-supported Troy Public Radio.
Support comes from the Janice Hawkins Cultural Arts Park on the main campus of Troy University. featuring the International Arts Center, the Fred Nall Hollis Museum, and the Hua Baoju Gallery. More information at troy.edu/artspark.